I believe, but I can't get over my abuse. That's what we're going to be looking at this week, my friends. The aftermath, the effects that are still holding you back, the aftermath of abuse. Now, this is not about why God let it happen. That's where I refer you to my themes on I believe, but I'm mad at God, or I believe, but where was God? This is about how we deal with the effects that have followed it. My friends, Colin Cook here and How It Happens. Thank you very much for joining me today. You're listening to a broadcast on Good News. We are looking at the work of God in Jesus Christ and how by faith we trust in Him, training our faith as we go, and how that affects our behavior, our thought patterns, our emotional growth, my friends. Our addictions, our struggles with various things like drugs or alcohol or food issues or heterosexual or homosexual addiction. So, stay tuned. I believe, but I can't get over my abuse. We're all experiencing the aftermath of our childhood days, my friends, the effect of it, and how it's holding us back. And so this is an attempt to help you to deal with that aftermath, to make it part of your life in a positive way rather than a negative way, to make use of your woundedness rather than be crippled by it. Now, granted, you may still be angry with God. Maybe you wonder why this happened. If so, I recommend my themes, I Believe, But I'm Mad at God. Or I Believe, But Where Was God? But now we're looking at the aftermath, as I said, the effects, and how we work them into our lives in a positive way. Now, as you know, there are different kinds of abuse. There's physical abuse, being beaten up and terribly physically abused as a child. There's sexual abuse, where a parent or a relative or some older teen in the neighborhood sexually molested you. Or there is also emotional abuse. And that has an enormous effect and is not often recognized by many people. And there's spiritual abuse. What's the effect of these various forms of abuse? All abuse, my friends, whether it was a one-time event or a series of events over many years or many months, has within it the element of control, in which you are controlled and therefore feel in a state of helplessness. Not only is it a control leading to helplessness, but it is a helplessness that leads to humiliation, your loss of freedom. The freedom to say, no thank you, yes please, the freedom to make a decision. In this control, your will was bypassed. You were not able to make a choice. Your choice was stolen from you. And if this happens over a long period of time, you begin to believe that you have no right to a choice, no right to freedom. You begin to believe that you have no ability to think for yourself, no confidence in your evaluation of things. In fact, over a period of time, your abuser, the one controlling you, will diminish you by making all the decisions for you, making sure you don't make decisions that would expose him or her. And so, over a period of time, you become less and less convinced of your ability to think for yourself, to make decisions for yourself. What actually happens if it's a prolonged abuse, my friends, is that you simply live in the abuser's world, not in your own. That abuser has created a world for you, a world in which he is in charge, in which his needs are satisfied, not yours, in which you are a servant of his goals, and you have none of your own. All of this develops a world in you, a world of guilt and shame, especially shame, worthlessness, dependency on the opinion and decisions of your controller, your abuser, subservience to him or her, submissiveness, there's no sense of the individual self anymore. You're always checking with someone else what should be done and what should not be done, and what you should feel and what you should not feel, and what's right and what's wrong. As a result, the victim of abuse very often has no clue what he really feels. He knows what his abuser feels. He knows what his controller feels because he's living in his world and always attentive to what he is going on with him, that is the abuser. But for himself, it's hard for him to register his own emotions. It's hard for him to register what he feels or thinks. And of course, my friends, this is not... There is always a sinister threat, an unknown, perhaps unspoken threat from the abuser, because he doesn't want you to tell on him. And so you're always living in a shadow world of guilt, a shadow world of shame. You can't speak the truth. You mustn't talk openly about what is happening to you. And if the abuser has done his work, quote, effectively, end quote, then you will think that this is really all your problem, not his. He's dumping. He will make sure that you are the one that's really doing wrong here, that you are at fault, that you went into this of your own accord, no matter how little you were, 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 or 8, it was about you. And so you're the one carrying his guilt. You're the one carrying his shame. He's dumping on you. Now, can you not imagine, my friends, how incredibly convoluted this all becomes in the mind and heart and emotions of the one abused, perhaps yourself? And think further. We're not simply talking about sexual abuse here. We're not simply talking about physical abuse. We can be talking about religious abuse, where a parent is a Christian, but has become a Christian out of her own and his own stress and distress over abuse inflicted upon him, and then he passes it on to his child by religious controls, by getting the child to make decisions that he, the controller, the parent, failed to make in his childhood. Without realizing what is happening, a religious person, a Christian person who was abused himself and has not resolved that abuse, will in fact create another victim out of his child. Now, of course, when this is spiritual abuse, then the one abused, the victim, translates this all into what God is like as well. Remember, the victim has no world of his own. He's living in the world of the abuser. And so he interprets God based upon what he sees in that abuser's world. That is, that God is harsh, that God is judgmental, that God is forever accusing, that God is to be feared. And if there is any sense of mercy, it's mercy that must be bought, earned, just as the victim earns it from his abuser by doing things that are pleasing to the abuser, by buying time, buying favor, buying even food in certain circumstances. It is a very evil and distorted world, my friends. Often abused people feel they should always be harshly treated because they've been trained in thinking that it is their problem, it is their fault. They have been trained in guilt and trained in shame. They're not worthy enough, not good enough, they think, to be treated in a normal and healthy way. They must cringe and they must buy mercy. They must always be eking out favors. They don't have any anger towards their abuser. Oh, they don't even recognize the right to anger. They only know the role of being subservient and submissive. They deserve what they get. Any punishment is good for them. And worse still, my friends, they interpret all of this as love. They don't run away. They don't try to escape because they say, oh, he loves me. They have come to interpret the controller's control as love. They have come to interpret the controller's need as love. And in fact, they need also themselves to interpret it as love, because if it isn't love, then they have nothing, because they only have a shadow of themselves. Now, my friends, I know all this, if you have been abused or are being abused, may be very disturbing to you. Perhaps it's a light, though, that shines in your head. Now, let me remind you that I am a spiritual counselor. I'm not a psychologist. I have no certification to practice psychology and no license to practice psychology in Colorado or any other state. I am simply telling you what I have seen and what I have known. And I want to encourage you now, because you see, it may well be that you have extended that world of abuse, especially if it was a spiritual abuse, into your religious world now, so that knowing God is a drudgery, a sorrow, a heaviness, a religious experience filled with guilt. And it may be that that is why it is so hard for you to enjoy God, to have faith in Him, to trust Him, to delight in Him. You are operating out of duty because that is how your abuser made you operate, out of duty. There's no joy in it. And I have come to you to say, my dear friends, that is not faith in Jesus. Don't be alarmed. It doesn't mean to say you don't believe in Jesus, but it means to say that lots of trappings from your abused world have entered into your religious faith and infiltrated your worldview of God so that it becomes a pain to know Him, a heaviness, a sadness, a fear, a guilt. But our God, our Heavenly Father, now says to you, my friend, that His Son has borne your griefs and carried your sorrows. That's Isaiah 53, verse 4, and that's the starting point where you can begin to experience healing. Jesus has borne your griefs and carried all your sorrows, so that having borne them, carried them, they are lighter on you as you exercise faith. That heaviness will lift, that sorrow can turn to joy, that guilt to innocence, that grief to acceptance and blessing, as you train your faith in understanding what God has done in Christ for you. Now, friends, we're only in the middle of September, but I do not see a clear road ahead for October in regard to the rent for this radio broadcast. That is the rent for October. The rent is $850, my friends, and I am asking you if you would give special consideration to the rent for October. I have to pay it on the 10th of each month. It takes about 10 days to process, but I'm looking ahead at all the expenditures and all the costs we've had in the last several months, especially this month, and I'm saying to myself, we don't have the money there. Now, I'm not afraid, because I'm learning that I don't have to know my future. I don't have to know the future of tomorrow, even, as I put my faith and trust in God that He will supply. If there are people out there who are particularly blessed by this program, moved by it, helped by it, trained by it, would you please consider the rent for the radio broadcast for October? It's $850. Perhaps you can take care, one person can take care of all of it. Maybe it might be two people at $425. Maybe it might be three or four people at a couple of hundred or so, or 100. So would you consider it? The rent for October's How It Happens broadcast. We pay for air to keep this broadcast going. Thank you very much, my friends. Send your check to FaithQuest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado, 80160. That's FaithQuest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado, 80160. I'll see you next time, my friends. Cheerio and God bless.